Jeremy. So probably worth finding the part of the handout that put some slides in, because I will talk through and refer to some figures that I've put in there. So yeah, today I'm just going to give a brief sort of overview of a piece of work we did about 18 months ago, looking at whether we could use animal wearable data to say something about grazing management. So a couple of pieces of context to start. The first slide there, called Use of Technology. Some of you may be aware that DairyNZ, every 5 years we run a survey, just tracking industry trends in terms of adoption of different technologies. And so you can see in the figure that I've got there, the automation technologies, those big yellow bars there, they are the most commonly adopted technologies, and I think probably, most likely that's because there's a really clear value proposition. You can kind of work out, okay, this is the return I'm going to get from these technologies, particularly for rotaries, where you can see there's much higher adoption than herringbones. Historically, the adoption of wearables, and by wearables I'm talking about collars, ear tags, boluses, pedometers, those kind of things. Historically, the adoption of them has been really low, but we in the last survey that we ran earlier this year, we saw a large increase in adoption there. For those that haven't adopted yet, they were also on the wish list of about a third of farmers. So a lot of interest in the topic. And I guess that sort of standing question there, if you think back to the comparison between automation and these data capture type sensor technologies, I guess that standing question is, how can we maximise the value of that data to actually provide a good return? So the other piece of context, this piece of work was done as part of the NZ Bidder project, and that's a collaboration between AgResearch, Fonterra and DairyNZ. And the background to that is a 4-year piece of work. Animal care is increasingly important to customers, and I guess that the question there was, can we use the sensors to give to actually measure cow experience, right? Because it was a very subjective thing. So can we quantify some of these things? And there was three use cases that were part of the program. One around heat stress, which probably more relevant for the North Island, but I think even in Canterbury there could be some days where that's relevant. One around positive well-being. That's happy cow kind of words, and then another one around grazing management, which is what I'm going to talk about today. And I think the quote there at the bottom of that page from Colin Holmes, good grazing management is the art of successful compromise between several conflicting requirements of pastures and animals. I think it really sums up the skill that's required to achieve good pasture management, and I think a key word in there is art, and that's really the background to can we use sensors to remove some of that subjectivity and some of that skill to improve repeatability across people. So yeah, rationale for the piece of work, farmers are investing it or are considering these wearables. At the moment, that data is typically just used for animal health monitoring, whether that be heat detection or health alerts, things like that. But it does represent a really large pool of data that potentially we could be doing other things with. So we had a workshop with a group of farmers and grazing management experts, and actually in that workshop really refined exactly what we wanted to do and what question were we going to ask and to do an experiment on. And the question that came out there was, can we use animal sensor data as a non-subjective, near real-time indicator of the feed availability for the herd? And if we could do so, hopefully that would simplify decision-making, so taking that subjectivity out of it, obviously saving time, hopefully if we're improving pasture management, increasing our profit, as well as improving the value of the technology and the return that would be providing, and of course linking back to NZ Bidder, a proof point for animal feeding. So what did we actually do? We set up an experiment down at the Ashley Dean Research and Development Station. There were three allocations of feed that we were that the cows experienced: 80%, 120%, 100% and 120%, and that is equivalent to about that 200 to 400 kilos of dry matter per hectare, which is probably within that range of subjectivity, right, where you put a group of people in the paddock and ask what the cover is, then that 200 kind of 200 or 300 kilos dry matter per hectare is where you start getting some disagreements. The cows themselves, we did 24-hour grazings with a fresh allocation in the morning, and we repeated the experiment in spring and summer to reflect different stage of lactation, different pasture composition, etc., to see whether that had an effect. And it was a pasture-only diet, so we did remove potential noise that could have been introduced by feeding different supplements. There were four herds in that diagram there, 25 cows in each group, and they the experiment lasted 20 days, 4 or 5 day periods. So they started on period one, getting 100% of what we estimated their requirements to be. Then they switched to either the 80 or the 120, so under or over feeding, and then switching back to 100, and then switching to the opposite one that they didn't experience before. And the two herds for each of those under and over allocations, one of them was adjusting the area, so the pre-grazing cover was actually the same between when they were fully fed and whether they were under and over, and we just changed that area. That was because I guess that treatment's sort of we had a much greater degree of control about what we were actually feeding them there. The other two were adjusting the pre-grazing cover, so the area was exactly the same between when they were fully fed in that treatment period, but there was either more or less feed, and obviously you were a little bit at the mercy of what covers are on hand, so it's a little bit less control there. And so those four herds, they experienced a range of feeding across that period, and I guess the question was, could we see that in the sensor data and use that to predict that those different levels of feeding? So I've put some pictures up there at the top of the next page here, just to give you an idea of what those differences look like, and you can quite clearly see a difference in the residuals in particular between those different allocations. In terms of what we measured on the pasture, we did a pre and post grazing cover, as well as during the daylight hours, because remember they were getting allocated fresh feed in the morning. Every 2 to 3 hours we were also taking walking those paddocks to get that rate of pasture disappearance in that break. Calibration cuts to calibrate the plate meter, as well as taking pasture quality as well. The animals, each animal was wearing 5 different sensors. So they had ice cubes, which are a pedometer, a research pedometer. They had cow manager ear tags. They had an Effie collar and an E-Shepherd collar. Those two devices were on the same collar. And they also had a SmackTech rumen bolus in them. And you can the table there gives you an idea of the different behaviours that those sensors report on. Onto the interesting part, I've just got two kind of results slides there on the next page. In terms of the correlations, so just looking at individual factors there, of the range of those different behaviours, as well as some of the pasture metrics like the pre-grazing, post-grazing, and some of the pasture quality measures, are in that box there, and basically the size of the dot represents the strength of the relationship, the colour, whether it was a positive or a negative relationship. So just draw your attention to a couple of things. Towards the bottom right-hand corner there, you can see there's a cluster of darker blue dots. That's where the rumination times for the various sensors are. And so I guess what that's showing is that a minute of at a herd average level, a minute of ruminating time for an Effie collar was about the same as a minute of ruminating time from the SmackTech bolus or from the cow manager ear tag. So the devices at a herd level were basically saying similar things in terms of rumination time. It was a little bit less, the relationship was a little bit less strong for eating time, which was a bit further up up the slope there. If we look at the pasture metrics, so that's sort of the sort of left-hand ones. If you go most of the way to the bottom, you can see there's a stronger set of dots there. That's the relationship between rumination time and the pasture metric. So pre-grazing cover, some of the quality attributes, as well as post-grazing residuals. So as an individual predictor, rumination time was the strongest behaviour in terms of predicting those pasture metrics, which was not anywhere near as strong for eating time. So I guess perhaps it aligns with some of the messages that others are saying, but I guess instinctively a lot of people gravitate towards eating time as a measure of how the animal is interacting with the pasture, which this would suggest no, actually, that rumination time is a much more useful behaviour. If we move down onto the bottom one there in terms of the performance, so the different columns there are the 5 different sensors, and the 3 different rows there is pre-grazing cover post-grazing residual and then disappearance, which is the difference between the pre and the post. I guess key points there are that post-grazing residual was the best predicted pasture metric, better than the pre-grazing. And there was a range of, and in particular of the different measures, whether it was kilos of dry matter per cow, which on the one hand, certainly I had anticipated that would be the best predicted because that's the animal behaviour. Actually, the kilos of dry matter per hectare was the better predicted of the two. And so the best ones there, the three different devices that reported rumination time, that the combination of those behaviours that sensor was reporting on explained about 50% of the variation in post-grazing residual. So from a biological perspective, quite a strong relationship, but 50%, there's still a lot of noise in there. Disappearance, I guess as a proxy for intake, was quite poorly predicted by the data. We also looked at, that's looking at the colour, probably should have explained that, sorry, looking at the colour dots, the triangles and the crosses that I've sort of overlaid on there. We looked at what other data could we add in there that might improve that prediction. So we added in the data that the sensors were providing plus the duration that those cows were in the paddock. So trying to remove the effect of the cows walking off to milking because paddocks are, you know, obviously different locations on different days. And then we also looked at adding in pasture quality as a predictor as well. So basically you can see for the most of those sensors, adding those extra pieces of information had very little impact on improving those models or the predictability of them. The exception being the two devices that didn't report rumination time, adding in pasture quality did improve the predictability of them. And I think it's quite a logical thing to explain if we link back to those associations in that triangle in the previous slide. Rumination time was the best predictor, so adding in duration in the paddock is not really going to add a lot of benefit, right, because rumination time is occurring anywhere. And likewise, pasture quality was reasonably well correlated with the rumination time, so for those two different devices that didn't report rumination time, adding in the quality improved their prediction. So just finally, I guess, what does that all mean? So the last slide there on the figures on the left-hand slide, that's just the actual measured post-grazing residual versus the predicted from using that sensor data, so that you can see that there is a good strong relationship there reflecting that 50% explanation of variation. I guess, so as a proof of concept, I think we can tick the box as saying successful. Potentially, there is potential there to use animal sensors to predict post-grazing residual in particular. I guess in terms of actually how you might go and apply that, well, because rumination time is something that occurs any time in the day, or actually particularly occurs at certain times of the day, but it's not specifically related to a paddock, we were doing 24-hour grazing. Well, what if you had, if you grazed two paddocks in that time, is it possible to predict the residual of each paddock? Possibly not. Or what noise is added if you're feeding supplements? We're not sure. And I guess then, is the predictability actually good enough? You know, like an R squared of only explaining 50% of the variation, is that accurate enough to be useful? And perhaps at a daily level it's not, but certainly in terms of tracking those weekly or fortnightly trends in terms of what might be happening to that residual, potentially could be quite useful. And you can see that in the figure there where the little one that's labelled current milkers, where, you know, over winter you can clearly see the predicted residual sitting at that sort of 1300 level, rising through to over summer, you know, going up to the 1700-1800 and then coming back down in the winter. So you can see that natural seasonal variation that you'd expect to see there. So successful proof of concept. I guess ultimately now the next steps are determining what is there actually value in this and how might you use that data to change decision making. Thank you.
Great. So a question from me, first of all, is so 50% sort of variation here, putting on the spot here, Paul, how good's a plate meter?
Well, If you think about the calibration cuts that we do, so that's where you go and take, you know, you throw out mark out an exact area, you cut the pasture to ground level and actually dry it, so you know exactly how many kilos of dry matter per hectare are in that area. If you plot that against what the plate meter has said, then the R squareds of those, the plate meter sort of explained, or the compressed pasture height measured by the plate meter explains probably 70% perhaps on average. So we'd say a plate meter is better in that context. But of course, this is just a first look. There is potentially a whole lot of other things you could add in there to improve that predictive ability perhaps.
Good. So watch the space. And I guess the other part of this too is you need to get companies on board to get the software and algorithms in place.
Absolutely. And I guess it's probably almost already at the point where it's a successful proof of concept. Actually, the tech companies need to look at this now and go, okay, is this something that we want to incorporate into our systems and continue that development?
So as farmers, if you're using this sort of stuff, you know, the pressure does come from you. So to push this on.
Yep.
Any questions from the audience? All good?
Off the hook.
Yeah. Have a bit of a stand up if you like. She's pretty hot, and a bit of a token of appreciation.